Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
All right, we will get into some training camp talk with John McClain. Quick update. This is from Cheetah Craft, Channel 11. Friend of the show, and I would say the official meteorologist of Payne and Pendergast, since she was in my wife's wedding party. Laura is now a Category 3 hurricane, expected to become a Cat 4 by midday today, making landfall between midnight and 3 a.m. along the Texas-Louisiana border. Keep your guard up for any slight changes. Good advice, Cheetah. Good advice.
And I would say, because I was down in League City, and especially south of League City, the flooding was pretty bad last go-around. And I met one of our listeners at a CVS, like right when we could actually make it to the CVS, who was in his attic and had to be chainsawed out because if you end up in your attic and the water rises, you can get trapped there, obviously.
Yeah.
So if you don't have an axe or a chainsaw or some way to get yourself out of there, just stay the hell out of the attic if the floodwaters are rising.
Do I need a chainsaw? I'm on the 15th floor of a high-rise. Do I need a chainsaw?
If the water gets up to your floor in your high-rise, then I would say build an ark.
Okay.
If you started on your ark.
Funny you say that. I've already started on that, so that'll be good. I'll just finish it this afternoon, yeah.
And then you got to go up and round up one of each sex of all the animals around.
I've already started that, too. That's awesome. Really cool.
You can't let them start humping until after they get off the boat, because you don't know how long it's going to last, you know?
Yeah, unfortunately.
It's one thing. You could withstand, like, having two of every animal on there, but not all of their their offspring.
Procreation would be a problem. No question about that.
That would have been the hardest thing for him to do, was, like, keep all those mammals.
Keep them apart. Yeah, keep them from getting horny. John McClain joins us on the program right now. The general, he joins us each and every week. 7 o'clock hour this week, back to the 8 o'clock hour on Wednesdays next week. John, great to talk to you as always. John, you have a lot of friends I know that probably walk up to you and see you as the expert on the NFL and the Texans for them, and they're fans of the Texans, and I'm sure this time of year they ask you, hey, how are they looking at training camp? Who's looking good at training camp? When you get asked that, John, what's your big takeaway that you tell your friends when they ask you about training camp for the Texans in 2020?
Well, first I'll tell them you could subscribe to Texas Sports Nation, our sports website, where everything I see every day at camp I write about.
Yeah.
5 Texans takeaways, columns every day. But instead of asking me what I see, I say, what do you want to know? And most of it starts with the defense. What are they going to do about pass rush and pass coverage? And then the second thing is always the receivers. Who's going to replace Hopkins? Can they stay healthy? It's so weird to not get questions about the offensive line, which we've been bombarded with going back to 2017 when Dwayne Brown had his holdout. So I don't get asked about the offensive line now. Did in the offseason, but not anymore.
You know, obviously one of the big issues with the Texans last year was that by the time they faced Kansas City in the playoffs, they had a bunch of guys in the secondary that were either cast-offs or backups, or they were injured, and that needed to get better. I know Bill O'Brien doesn't want to have to use a lot of rookies this year, but at some point he's going to have to. I feel like so far, in terms of guys that he would trust out there on the field, it feels like John Reed is the guy that maybe he would trust with. I'm not saying he's got the most potential or he's going to be the best, but a big part of a rookie playing is just whether or not the coach trusts him. It feels like O'Brien trusts John Reed.
O'Brien told me after practice yesterday that John Reed had the best camp of all the rookies. And I asked him if being 24 years old and more mature, if he thought that had anything to do with it. And he said, I don't care if he's 21, 24. He just, some guys, they just get it, and he does, and he came in in great shape, and he learns so much in the virtual off-season program that he takes it to the field. Now, he's running second team right now and plays on all the special teams. That's where he'll start off contributing. But if they have an injury to one of their slot corners, and that can be Roby, it can be Vernon Hargraves, it can be Eric Murray, but I think he would get a chance to play. Now, Ross Blacklock, who I wrote about today, he comes in passing situations, and he talked to us on his Zoom yesterday about the difference in reading, reacting on rundowns, and being able to just get off the ball and get up the field when he's trying to get the passer, and it takes a lot of the thinking out of it. So I would expect those two to make the biggest contributions of the rookies.
John, you've been at every practice, and you've watched every snap of these 11-on-11s, and we know that J.J. Watt has not practiced really at all in the 11-on-11. Fuller did a little bit yesterday. Brandon Cooks has not been out there very much. Kiki QT is actually banged up, and he hasn't been out there. We know the other guys are healthy. They're just being ramped up. I guess from what you've seen, John, who are some of the players that have maybe made an impression because they've gotten to take advantage of some snaps that are available to them now with J.J. out or with these wide receivers kind of being ramped up the way that they are?
Chad Hansen, a receiver, was running with the first team yesterday because three of them were out. Kenny Stills was being rested. Coulter and QT are they have injuries. Hanson's a two-year veteran. He's got good size. They were using him on some punt returns. O'Brien's praised him a couple of times in practice, so he got the reps because three other guys were out. And I noticed him. I've noticed him quite a bit. Now, I just don't see any way he's going to make the roster with the practice squad being increased, I think. And you can have veterans on there. I could see him definitely on the practice squad. Same way with their fifth-round pick, Isaiah Coulter. Maybe they're – I don't know about Charlie Heck, fourth-round pick at offensive tackle. It's haven't said much about him, and it's hard for an offensive lineman. And so the other ones – Buddy Howell as a third back, and Buddy's the biggest back they have. He's right. He looks like David Johnson. For some reason to me, Johnson weighs more, but Buddy just looks bigger. And since the third back does not have to be a receiver like Tywan Jones, because David Johnson is such a good receiver, Buddy could be the third back. When he had preseason carries in last year, he did well. And so he's another one that's getting more time. You know, and it's not really because he's getting more playing time because of injuries. Jordan Thomas, to me, if I had to pick one player who has stood out that I didn't expect it, and that would be the third-year tight end. I had low expectations based on him having one catch for 8 yards last season, but he did it again yesterday. Just every day in practice, he makes multiple big plays in traffic. I don't know. They're going to find enough playing time for all the tight ends. And then the last 2 days, Sean, you've seen it, especially yesterday. Collie Waring looked great going up, taking a ball away from defensive backs all over him for touchdowns. And it's a good problem to have, though.
Yeah, it is. John, on the defensive side of the ball, you know, J.J. has not been out there. It looks like Charles Omenihu has been taking up a lot of the snaps that J.J. would normally get. And they're going to have to find a pass rush from somebody other than J.J. And Omenihu is a guy who has that in his repertoire of skills. What have you thought of number 94 so far in this camp?
Omenihu is going to play inside next to Watt in passing situations with Blacklock next to him, and then Jacob Martin and Whitney Mercilin, the other pass rushers. And I envision Martin being opposite Watt, and then Merciless could line up outside of them. He can line up the middle, shoot the gaps, drop in coverage. But Omenihu going into his second season is a guy they expect a big improvement. And then he said in the off season that he had worked to kind of redistribute his body to add more muscle in the right places. And, you know, he's 6'5" and a half and 285 right now, and he's a load. And playing next to Watt, J.J. is always going to get more attention than everybody else. That should give Omenihu a lot of chances to have 101 blocks to beat. And if Blacklock, you know, he's going to start off slow because he's a rookie. But eventually they love Blacklock when they ask him to get up the field. Those three together, along with Martin's speed and quickness off the edge, should give them a much more productive pass rush than last season.
They've got their two big run stuffers in Brandon Dunn and Angelo Blackson. Both those guys are making good, healthy money. Between Carlos Watkins, Albert Huggins, and P.J. Hall, do you get a sense for which one of those guys might be the favorite to make the team?
Well, Huggins would have to come out of nowhere, and then Hall came in. He was out of shape, and he's got to work his way back into shape. And then Carlos Watkins, it's his fourth year. He's got experience. You know, they only got one true nose tackle, and that's Brandon Dunn. Now, they got some other guys, a couple of rookies, a couple of veterans that could be there, but I don't know how many. I'm guessing they'll keep six linemen, and Carlos Watkins definitely has the inside track because of his experience.
It's John McClain, the general, joins us each and every Wednesday, normally at 8 o'clock today, of course, the second to last of the Texans training camp live shows. The last one will be tomorrow as the Texans take the field at NRG Stadium tomorrow night for a scrimmage, weather permitting, of course. We will be keeping an eye on that throughout the day here at Sports Radio 610. Download the radio.com app. Someone texted in, hey, can you guys start the show over? I got in a little late today. We actually can do that for you. You download the radio.com app and you use a radio.com rewind feature, and you can rewind to the beginning of the show and listen from the very beginning. And we won't spoil anything for you right now, but I would recommend you go do that because it was an amazing 6 o'clock hour of the show. John McClain's going to hang with us for one more segment. Big news at the safety position in the NFL, the former best safety in the league now looking for work. And there's a new highest-paid safety in the league, which has some Texans angles sort of tied to it. We'll get into that with John McClain next. Payne and Pendergast with you, Sports Radio 610, on a Wednesday. No Texans practice today. They have meetings. There will be a scrimmage tomorrow, weather permitting. So we'll keep an eye on Hurricane Laura, as we will for reasons that have nothing to do with football throughout the day here on Sports Radio 610 as we pick things back up with the General John McClain. For one more segment, we'll have John with us here. John, Earl Thomas is out there, and he's looking for work. And I know you, I think, obviously correctly shot down that he's not going to be a Houston Texan, even though some had speculated that in the national media. But Earl Thomas now is not even getting nibbles from the team that everybody thought was the default destination for him, the Dallas Cowboys. And other teams now, too. San Francisco has said, no, we're good. There's a few teams that have said, no, we've looked at Tampa. No, we looked at our roster. I think we're okay. When does Earl Thomas or does Earl Thomas find work, do you think?
Seattle and Baltimore had talked about bringing in Antonio Brown, who's about as bad a teammate as you can get. And both of the coaches, Pete Carroll and John Harbaugh, are notorious for taking players with baggage. They've done it throughout their careers, and it's helped them win Super Bowls. And when Pete Carroll did not want Earl Thomas back, and then John Harbaugh's players had a rebellion against Earl Thomas, and they put up with him last year when he was missing meetings and he was being late to meetings, and they fined him every day. But this time he wasn't reading his playbook and he was making mistakes on the field. And that's what got him in trouble with his teammates, besides all his problems off the field, because he always played. Well, now he's been making mistakes that infuriated them, and so they just had enough. And when your player, specifically your leadership council, ask your coach to get rid of a player like Earl Thomas, you know that guy's got issues. So they cut him. Jerry Jones talked to the media yesterday. That's one of the first things they wanted to know. He didn't say no. He didn't rule it out, which tells you they're checking him out. But if you've got a good thing going, I don't want to know why you would want to bring a guy like Antonio Brown or Earl Thomas in, who've been so disruptive off the field. But I think somebody, there's always a coach out there, says, okay, they couldn't handle him, but I can. And so I think Thomas at some point will get an interview, and he'll say all the right things about learning his lessons, and he will get another chance with somebody. But, man, if you talk to people in Baltimore right now, it's amazing they kept him as long as he did. Just like when we look back the way Antonio Brown torched his organization and his quarterback, you wonder, Mike Tomlin, how did he put up with that all those years?
Well, and John, I'll give the Texans credit because there was a report last year when Earl Thomas was a free agent that sounded kind of weird and didn't seem to make a whole lot of sense. But the report was that the Texans passed on having any interest in Earl Thomas because they weren't sure that he even wanted to play football. And, you know, of course, oh, I can't believe the Texans are being idiots or their stupid character concerns. For whatever it's worth and however much, how valid or accurate that report was, I think the Texans obviously were clued into something last year that there was something going on with Earl Thomas, because all these reports that you just mentioned, not to mention what's going on in his personal life with his wife chasing him around with a gun because she discovered he and his brother having an orgy, like all of these things add up to, okay, the Texans were onto something last year when they realized they shouldn't pursue him.
I think that his issues with the Seahawks, some of which have come out, that when Cam Chancellor, the strong safety, was there, and he was one of those guys that was a great leader and a great teammate, he could kind of control Thomas. And I don't know exactly what the issues were at Seattle, but, you know, the thing where he shot the finger at Pete Carroll because he didn't get paid and then he got hurt, and he was very bitter. A lot of people made excuses for him then. But it didn't come out about behind the scenes. And, of course, now it has. And teams check people out. You know, fans always want, let's get Antonio Brown. Let's get Earl Thomas. And teams check them out. And one of the first things O'Brien says every time we ask about a player, he talks about good teammate. And Earl Thomas and Antonio Brown are not good teammates.
Now, this is the 6 degrees of separation game we'll play with Earl Thomas and Deshaun Watson. And it's not even 6 degrees. It's 1 degree of separation. They share an agent. And Earl Thomas was a free agent. There was a whole lot of smoke about whether or not he was worth whatever. He thought he had a deal with Kansas City. And then Baltimore jumped in with a better deal. This is all last year. And then David Mugalletta got him a really good deal in Baltimore. David Mugalletta just got Buda Baker, the highest paid safety deal ever. And he is Deshaun Watson's agent. I get the feeling and the sense that David Mugalletta might be a little bit more demanding than Lee Steinberg, who's just happy to have a job these days. Deal. Lee Steinberg was Pat Mahomes' agent, and he's the one that apparently told Pat Mahomes to sign a 12-year deal. I feel like that David Mugalletta is going to get the maximum value for Deshaun Watson, and I don't know if that value or that deal comes this year.
Well, I know they're still trying to get him. They're trying to sign him before the season starts, and they've been working at it quite a bit. And so if he's not signed to the start of the season, I'll be surprised, because that's been the goal all along.
John, Seth brought up the Buda Baker deal. We're talking to John McClain, who's with us for the rest of this segment here on Sports Radio 610. What do you think DeAndre Hopkins is thinking as he watches one of his new teammates get the highest paid market resetting deal at the safety position?
I'm thinking he's thinking, maybe I better hire David Mugalletta, because he fired his agent from CAA, just like Laremy Tunsil did. And I believe I've read that DeAndre's using those three advisors that Laremy Tunsil used to help get him the highest paid, make him the highest paid offensive lineman in history. Now, Baker, who's never had an interception, and I was reading on Pro Football Focus about how people, quarterbacks targeting him, had over a 115 rating, but obviously the Cardinals love the guy, so they made him the highest paid safety in history. And I'm thinking, you know, that does not go beyond DeAndre Hopkins, who's trying to get a new contract, and it's got to bother him that he has not been able to get that deal done.
John, before we let you go, the other big bit of news out of the NFL this week is that they had a clean COVID sheet, thousands and thousands of tests, a clean COVID sheet for all the players. There were six staffers that had positive coronavirus tests, but of all the sports, I think people were most skeptical about the NFL. We'll see what it looks like when games actually start. But this has to be going just exponentially better than even the most optimistic NFL people thought it would go so far.
It's been phenomenal. They spent millions and millions of dollars to do what they've done. And the fact is, if a guy doesn't have the virus and he's bleeding and sweating and spitting on you in a game, hey, they bleed, sweat, and spit on each other anyway. Stas Seth, he played. How many years did you play? 10?
Yeah.
And so you played for 10 years. You know what it's like on the field. And so if guys don't have the virus, so what? Problem is, once they're out at camp and they can go out at night and you see mutton heads like the offensive tackle from the Titans, Wilson, Isaiah Wilson, who went to a Tennessee State party, which is a violation of protocols, and got caught, and saw the Seattle safety get cut trying to sneak a woman into the hotel. So there are going to be other players. And this was what I think J.J. Watt and O'Brien said this at the start of camp. The teams that are the most disciplined off the field are going to be the ones that win. And so you hope the message you give the players and the veterans give the players is not going to be lost on them.
It's John McClain joins us each and every week on Wednesdays. We'll start back up going to the 8 o'clock hour next week as Texans Training Camp Live steps aside, and we are back to four-hour shows on Friday. John, we appreciate the time as always. I will see you at COVID testing 10:30 sharp this morning.
I look forward to it. Thank you guys very much. Stay safe.
You too, John. Thank you. John McClain joining us for his weekly visit on the show. All right. Seth and I have headlines that we need to get to. Lots of headlines to get to. It's a busy, busy time in Houston sports. And also, we will hear from one of the rookies that we talked about as well. Thoughts on his defensive coordinator, as well as the penance that one must pay as a rookie in the NFL. We'll get to all that and headlines next. Hey, Seth, before we hear from Ross Blacklock, rookie defensive lineman for the Texans, I want to follow up on something McClain said when I asked him about Charles Omenihue, and he laid out what he thought, I think, kind of the third down or the passing down package would be for the Texans when it came to rushing the passer. And I don't want to misinterpret. It looked like you got a look when McClain was sort of laying out the personnel that the Texans might have in third downs. I just want to reset who he said would be in that package real quick for people who didn't get to hear it. J.J. Watt, obviously, on one side, he said that Omenihue and Blacklock would be rushing from the interior, and then he mentioned Jacob Martin and Whitney Merciless out there in some other portion of the package. I think he said Martin maybe on the other edge, with Whitney sort of being a kind of a jack of all trades, where he could come maybe from the nine spot way on the outside, or he could line up over the center and rush from one of the inside spots. What was going through your head when you heard McClain laying that out?
Well, at first I misunderstood him because I thought he meant that Omenihue would be. He said he would be down inside next to J.J. Watt, so I thought he meant that J.J. Watt would be inside too.
Gotcha. Okay.
Where J.J. has largely been rushing. He does go down inside from time to time, but mostly he's been rushing as the left defensive end in those in pass rush situations. So now that all makes sense. I think that Jonathan Gennard and Brennan Scarlett is a little bit of a minor battle that'll be played out over the course of several weeks here, because now on third down it hasn't been Brennan Scarlett, but on first and second down, I think Grenard has been pointed out as a guy that's good versus the run. So he's a stout dude. Maybe he has a chance to get in there more often as a run player than as a pass rusher.
Grenard has missed the last two practices, I should point out. As you lay that out as a potential position battle, it should be noted he's missed the last two practices. So,
oh, and Jacob Martin, though, has put on – now, they painted it out like he gained 25 pounds. I think that's a little bit misleading because he showed up last year weighing in the low 240s, and then apparently by the end of the season he was down to 225. So he'd gotten worn down, and he was lighting it. It looked like it. Whenever people would say, well, wow, he got 3.5 sacks on only 20% of the snaps. Like, yeah, he was only in on third and long because he weighed 225 pounds.
Right.
If you put him in on first and second down, he's not going to turn that into all of a sudden five times as many sacks. He's going to get run at a lot, or he would have last year. This year, he's going to be more of a complete player, and I think he might be in the mix if he can keep that weight on his frame of being more of a three-down player.
If you hate narratives, the worst thing that could happen to you was Jacob Martin getting 3.5 sacks last year because he came over in the Clowney trade, and Clowney only had 3 sacks. So it's already playing into the, well, if Clowney doesn't get these sacks and he's really not a great player, and then the guy he gets traded for, who was he was a no-name guy that was part of that trade. The third round pick that the Texans got was thought to be the marquee piece of that deal coming in. That guy goes and gets 3.5 sacks, like, see? See, look, you practically swapped the two of them out, and they're the same guy, Jacob Martin and Jadeveon Clowney.
Well,
like, stop.
And what happened with Jacob last year too was on the plays where he got sacks, they were really nice plays, you know, and he had speed that some offensive tackles just flat out couldn't handle.
Yes.
At times, they started committing a running back to chip block him. Like, he affected defenses. The problem was on the plays where he didn't have a sack. He was so light that he was getting handled pretty easily.
Yeah.
And that's the key is, okay, what is he doing on the plays where it's not a sack? Is he still pushing the pocket? Is he still a factor versus the run? That's his big challenge.
He has speed that offensive tackles can't handle, like certain offensive tackles named Charles Heck could not handle his speed yesterday.
Oh, really?
Yes.
That's right. I saw that in your notes.
Jacob Martin was getting into the backfield on Charlie Heck. Is it Charlie Heck's a rookie? That's how it's going to go. So
Charlie Heck's 6'8" too,
yeah.
And it's hard to play offensive tackle at 6'8", and so he's got some learning to do. And you know, obviously, I think Bill O'Brien understood that when he drafted him. I think he knows he's kind of a project.
I guess my question would be, if he doesn't play tackle at 6'8", what the hell is he going to play?
Well, power forward. Yeah. He can play. He's too tall for the Rockets.
Basically, what you're saying is football is hard to play if you're 6'8".
I'm guessing if he can't stay in front of Jacob Martin, then he might not be good on defense in the NBA either.
Probably.
I don't know if he's a 3-and-D type.
He'll be a 6-foul dude. That he's an enforcer. He's like a goon in hockey. You just send him in to hack. That's all you send him in to do. All right, so speaking of Ross Blacklock, he met with the media yesterday. The rare rookie press conference we got yesterday from Ross Blacklock. I think any time these defensive players sit down in front of the media, I think they want to know about Anthony Weaver, who is, among non-players, maybe the most pivotal guy for the Texans this year, the new defensive coordinator promoted from defensive line coach. He's still coaching the defensive line this year, so Ross Blacklock gets an extra dose of Anthony Weaver. Here is Ross Blacklock on his coach.
Coach Weave is a great dude. I can honestly say I've never been a coach. I've been around a coach that acts and carries himself like Weave does. Great dude, technician, loves to have fun. Just a great guy all the way around. I'm glad he's my coach. I met him in the combine, and I said to myself, I met him for 20 minutes, and I said, man, I wish this dude was my coach, and I only knew him for 20 minutes. And
that was,
you know, it's kind of crazy how things work out, but And Romeo, he's a great dude. He's a legend. You know, he's been around the league 30 years, just picking his brain too. We talk a lot after plays. He tries to get me right and tells me what's wrong and what's good and what I could have done better. So just being able to have them two around me is, you know, is good.
Yeah, that was a cool little story he threw in there. I thought we were just going to get a cliche response at first. As I was listening to that, it's a shame that free agency has turned into such a numbers thing where you don't actually visit teams anymore. It used to be, not even that long ago, guys would actually visit. You know, the big name guys would still sign on day one, but a lot of guys would still take visits. Now they don't. Like, Weaver is that kind of guy, especially as a former player.
Yes.
That I think he just, he finds the right balance of being just a guy, but also being very professional and very smart. I mean, I don't like having these conversations about how he's head coach material and everything, because I don't think Weaver himself is focused on anything other than trying to get this defense right this year. But I think that there's something about just whether it's youthfulness or whatever it is that maybe just energy alone can be a bit of a shot in the arm for this defense this year. Aside from anything he does with the scheme, that maybe a little bit more of an edge, a little bit more of an ambitious and an aggressiveness, that might make a big difference.
Yeah, Seth, one of the places that it sounded like you were going with that when you brought up free agency was that Anthony Weaver may not be here very long if this defense gets to where he wants to get it to. He may wind up being a head coach and not being here for more than one offseason. And it's unfortunate because I think you're right. If free agency allowed you to do visits before the high ticket guys went off the market, Weaver would be an amazing recruiter. You know what I mean? Like, Weaver would be a guy where if I was a veteran guy or a guy who's you know, got a real tough decision between do I play for this team, do I play for that team, the defensive coordinator that you play for and how you connect with that guy is, I would imagine, a real tipping point for a lot of guys.
Yes. Somebody asked, why is nobody talking about McKinney? Is he injured? No, I think it's because we know what Bennardrick McKinney is. I think we haven't – there's a bunch of guys we haven't talked about for the most part, and it's because we know what they are. There's not a contract situation. So we've been talking a lot about the unknowns.
I can tell you, too, Seth, I think one of the reasons, having watched these practices, we're not talking about McKinney is, one, he's another guy who's getting treated with ramp-up kid gloves. He's not out there every rep like a lot of guys. Or Cunningham is out there a lot. McKinney's not out there as much as Cunningham is. And I think the other reason is, what's Bennardrick McKinney's superhero power? Tackling, right? Like, his thing is getting up, you know, getting into the hole, tackling, you know, bringing guys down, you know, moving laterally, tackling guys. There's no tackling that goes on at these. You're not bringing guys to the ground. That's what Bennardrick McKinney does. He tackles ball carriers, so it's a little harder to tell with him, you know, just where he's at. But he's not injured. He's out there. He's healthy.
We had another texter ask quite angrily about why the Chiefs have to buy tickets in 4-game clusters. Why are you asking us? Because it turns out he was trying to text 6:10 a.m. in Kansas City.
Ah,
so he must have Googled the text line number or something.
Or if you're like, a lot of diehard people have 6:10 in their phone, like they have it listed in their contacts.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like 610 hotline or 610 text page. And so he just hit the wrong 610, could have been, maybe.
Well, I don't know. He wouldn't have both those in his hot
maybe
page.
He is. Maybe he is. Maybe he. Ron the Show Hughley has all of a sudden brought people to two different stations now.
Okay. Because he was. So I asked this guy, I texted back first before we got it straightened out. I was like, why exactly are you. He actually started in with an angry coronavirus text, and I said, why exactly are you texting us about this? We're talking about Albert Huggins. And and then he explained, because of the ticket policy up in Kansas City, the prices are sky high because there are tickets available, but they're limited. So I asked him, I was like, oh, okay, well, we got that out of the way. What are the big topics in Kansas City right now?
And because the big topic here is Albert Huggins.
Yeah. I know.
You
I know.
Say that, and I feel like, man, our topic selection is way off.
This radio station must suck.
God, I think I'm going to listen
to about Albert 610
Huggins. In Kansas City. It sounds like they've got their finger on the pulse of things.
So he said that this ticket cluster thing is a big deal, and then outside of that, they're all looking at Clyde Edwards-Helaire. So yeah. as many of our LSU fans would tell you, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, I almost feel preemptively bad for Clyde Edwards-Helaire and how he's not going to get the contract he deserves a few years from now, because he's gonna blow it up in that offense.
He's
just gonna absolutely kill it. And yet he's a running back, so they're gonna give him the shaft somehow.
He is going high in fantasy drafts, like high in fantasy drafts, big time. Hey Seth, did you see that that Dan Orlovsky tweeted yesterday that he's starting to warm up to the Texans offensively here? Orlovsky, who I think has been very critical of Bill O'Brien, and he's certainly not alone. A lot of people have been critical of Bill O'Brien, but he tweeted yesterday, I'm warming up to the Houston Texans post-hop. The reasons he lists: best and most cohesive offensive line they've had since Deshaun Watson arrived. Watson's a superstar. If they stay healthy, a wide receiver, they can play the long ball or the catch-and-run game. Pass-catch running backs to get the ball out to. And then he punctuates it with, Watson's a superstar again. So,
yeah,
Dan Orlovsky coming around on the Texans.
And I think that there's something to that, that partly we can look at this on paper, and even in practice we haven't really seen the whole crew together, right? And, man, it just makes perfect and total sense. There's speed everywhere. There's nothing worse for a defense to have to worry about than speed. And when you've got multiple spots where somebody can exploit you, I think they've got what on paper looks to be really good. My knee-jerk, you know, reservation is always still, man, in football, more than in any other sport, looking good on paper does almost nothing for you.
Sure.
You know, we've seen this play out so many times. It seems like about 90% of the time, if you get excited about something that was put together in free agency in football, it ends up disappointing you. Going back to the dream team in Philadelphia or wherever else. The one thing that might counteract that is the fact that you've put all this speed out there, but it's not necessarily – I almost feel better about the fact that they aren't superstars. I almost feel better about the fact that it's, hey, it's Brandon Cooks, who's been very good and productive, had a little bit of a down the year last year, but he's still not a superstar wide receiver. Likewise, look, Randall Cobb, yes, he's past his prime, but you also don't think of him as – this isn't the same as signing a superstar who's past his prime. it all makes sense. They got to stay healthy, but it all makes sense that these are the right kind of guys that could blend into a new system.
I think of all the things Orlovsky bullet points there, Seth, the running back one is interesting and maybe the most polarizing one for Texan fans because David Johnson is involved in it, and I think people are just, at best, they're wait and see with David Johnson right now, if not angry that the Texans are paying his contract. And I think maybe there's some justification when you look at running backs and you go, boy, are we sure that O'Brien is going to deploy these guys the right way? Because you look at, they signed Lamar Miller a few years ago, and they never really used him as that speed guy that he was in Miami. They ran him between the tackles a lot. I think a lot of that was early on necessity because of who the quarterback was, Brock Osweiler. And then they trade for Duke Johnson last year, and you go, okay, now this is something here. O'Brien actually proactively going out and getting a guy who's a pass catcher. And then they didn't really use him as much as you would have hoped, even though he was really productive when he was on the field. Now they've got David Johnson. I just tell you that just watching this team in practice, these first nine practices, there appears to be a concerted effort to get the ball in the hands of these running backs in the passing game. Like I do think, and maybe yeah. Tim Kelly is the reason for that. I can just tell you the bottom line is I do think this is going to be different this year.
And there was, you know, the DeAndre Hopkins' greatness almost works against Deshaun Watson at times. Not even necessarily that because Deshaun was trying to force the ball to DeAndre or anything. It's that it's hard. Like, when do you take your eyes off? If you're going through your progression, when do you take your eyes off of DeAndre Hopkins? Because more times than not, when he's not open, he eventually ends up open. Or he's in the right position where you can throw a 50-50 ball to him and he's going to grab it. So it disrupts the timing to where there'd be times and you look on first and second down especially when you don't need 10 yards, but the running back is wide open over the middle for an easy 5, 6, 7 yards. DeAndre was still thinking too aggressively in those moments. That's where the thinking is, okay, without DeAndre Hopkins out there, he's still got other options that might get open a little bit faster, and also he'll be quicker to check down. And it's as simple as that sometimes. It's just Deshaun knows where the check down is. You know, his football IQ is very, very high. It's when do you rein in the aggressiveness a little bit?
He's been using that a lot in training camp, and he gets a lot of positive reinforcement when he uses it in training camp as well. So I think you're onto something there, Seth.
You give him like a little minnow like you would to a dolphin that you're training?
No, you're not walking over with a fish and dangling it over its head. Here you go, Deshaun. No.
Yeah.
Let's do some headlines here as we head towards Texans training camp live at the top of the hour.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines.
Maybe the strangest day in recent history for Astros baseball as they play a doubleheader yesterday of 2 7-inning baseball games. They split the doubleheader. They win the first one 6-3 on the strength of a 5-run first inning against the Los Angeles Angels. And then the Angels win the nightcap 12-4. A rough one for Brandon Belak, Seth. I think the, whatever lucky charm he's carrying around in his back pocket as a graduate at the University of Notre Dame, whether it's a shamrock or maybe a little leprechaun that he's carrying around with him, he just needs to throw out whatever it is and step on it and squish it because it's not working right now. For the second straight start, Brandon Belak doesn't even get out of the first or second inning. Doesn't get out of the first inning yesterday. Gets shelled, and the Astros lose 12-4 in the nightcap. They take 2 out of 3. The game that was supposed to take place today at noon is canceled because of the weather that's coming in. They'll make that game up in Anaheim with the Astros playing as the home team in Anaheim on September 5th in another doubleheader that they're going to play out there. So for the first time this year, the Astros are feeling the effects of this weird season with the miniature game doubleheaders and whatnot. 17-14 now on the year, Seth.
The miniature doubleheaders, and then you add a doubleheader to that. So now they're dealing with both the coronavirus and a hurricane that's right. Barreling down on the Gulf Coast.
Yeah.
And I will say this, as much as I would have loved to get out there with 2 wins yesterday, I just like watching Christian Javier pitch.
Yes.
And I liked watching Mike Trout in his first at-bat, giving that little smile when he saw Javier's fastball. Where it's got so much spin that it looks like it's rising, and it's a little bit of that optical illusion. This is, aside from the unexpectedly really good ERA that the Astros have been able to put together with all these young pitchers, they've got a lot of guys that are just fun to watch pitch. You know, there's something inelegant about a bunch of guys just getting up and rifling 97 miles an hour fastballs all day long. I like that. Framber has some quirkiness to his pitching repertoire. I love that Christian Javier has this rising fastball that freaks everybody, the invisible, as they call it. It's been really cool.
Well, and then Greinke is sort of fun action films. Right? Greinke's a feature film when it comes to being fun to watch. That Greinke yells out the signals from the mound, by God, and then throws a 53-mile-an-hour curveball. And then Lance McCullers is the other frontline guy they have right now, and Lance is just a red ass all the time. He's fun to watch. You read lips with Lance on the mound, and it's not FCC friendly. So you're right. That's a pretty fun. I'll call it a 4-man rotation right now, Seth, because my fear is my guy Belak is not long for this rotation. I think they're going to find another solution at the fifth starter.
I feel bad. I jinxed Belak after 3 starts ago when I said, you know what, this kid's just, he's just got a certain veteran savvy about him. He can work himself out of pickles. And that, it was 3 starts ago where I think he had walked the leadoff batter in 3 innings in that game. I mean, there were hints of what was to come.
Not sustainable.
But boy, it came fast.
Eventually those leadoff walks turn into actual runs. Next headline, the Rockets game 5 of their first round series with the Oklahoma City Thunder is this evening at 5:30 from the bubble in Orlando. The big news for this game came down yesterday afternoon. Russell Westbrook will miss game 5 as he continues to nurse a quad injury. Look, it's at this point, it can't really be used as an excuse when in the first 2 games of the series, you dominated the Thunder. You won by double-digit games. This is a team that should still be able to beat the Thunder even without Russ out, or even with Russ out without Russell Westbrook. It would certainly be a lot easier if he were in right now for this team. But the bottom line, Seth, for this team, the Rockets, is they got to knock down their open threes. Eric Gordon, chief among those folks, and James Harden has to protect the basketball. If they do those 2 things, they should win this game. I think in fairly stress-free fashion this evening.
Yeah, and Adam Spolane, who you should follow, he's one of our insiders. He does a great job.
Yeah,
he does a great job with both the Astros and the Rockets. I'm torn because he called out, who's our guy, the former basketball player, Doug Gottlieb. He called out Doug Gottlieb for a lazy take because Doug Gottlieb had said, that the reason that they're losing is because they live by the three, they die by the three. So Adam Spillane said, this is so lazy. The Rockets made 40% of their threes on 58 tries in game 4. The offense isn't the issue. It's playing a switch-everything defense against an ISO-heavy offense. It's the biggest issue. I partially disagree with Adam because I think that, yes, shooting 58 threes isn't an issue, but when you have a lead and You're taking hasty threes and bad threes, and Harden's shooting them from 30 plus feet out. I think that your offense is an issue. The offense faltered, and it wasn't just by circumstance or bad luck that they were so horrendous with their 3-point percentage in the third and fourth quarter after they went on that 8-0 run. So they've just got to be smarter. They got to play smarter basketball on both ends of the court.
Yeah, no question. Harden's got to make better decisions, and they need to win this game tonight, man. If they lose this game tonight, then the momentum that Oklahoma City really already has going into this game just gets continued. And then it'll be interesting to see if Russell Westbrook, if he's truly 100% in game 6, and obviously he should play. If he's not, then it gets interesting to see if he turns into a break glass in case of emergency situation with him, Seth. If you go, look, the season's on the line now. If we don't deploy everything, including maybe even a hobbled Russell Westbrook, then what are we doing here? So tip-off is at 5:30 tonight. Text message just real quick back to the Astros. Someone says, FYI, Belak was pitching on 2 days rest yesterday. Good point. The last time he pitched was on Saturday against the Padres. He pitches yesterday. You would like to think he could get through more than 1 inning, though. You know, he did only pitch an inning and a third on Saturday.
Yeah,
when you sit here and say he was on 2 days rest, he pitched an inning and a third on Saturday. It's not like he went 7 innings.
Are we going to start saying that about any relief pitcher? Like, well, hey, he did pitch just last night.
Yeah. Someone's saying that's difficult for the Verlanders, Scherzers, and Kershaw, let alone a rookie on 2 days rest. He barely pitched on Saturday text. I got to see if that's Brandon Belak's text line. There is his cell phone.
Well, at the very least, okay, if you pitched, okay, if it was the 1 1/3 innings that he pitched 3 days ago, then fine. But, like, let's not see it immediately. Let's get maybe if it showed up in the third or fourth inning by that point, then I might give the excuse there. It's been immediate. He was yanked because he had nothing in that game. No, I can't make an excuse for the fact that the last time he pitched, he gave up seven runs.
Right.
He gave up seven runs in one and a third inning.
Right.
And you're sitting here saying the reason that now he had a bad inning was because it was 3 days ago? That's definitely a Belak relative of some sort.
All right, the other big news.
FYI. Yeah. FYI. That's no different or better than you do know. Yeah, FYI.
The next headline, we talked a little bit about this with John McClain, just within the context of what it means for DeAndre Hopkins. One of DeAndre Hopkins' new teammates, Buda Baker, became the highest paid safety in football yesterday. 4 years, $59 million. Talked about what it meant to Hopkins. Seth, anytime there's a position that gets a position resetting deal in the market, and the Texans have a guy at that position, it does get me thinking forward to what contract negotiations are going to look like. Look, every tackle contract that happened since they traded for Laremy Tunsil became, oh, look at so-and-so got this. Or certainly every quarterback contract, you know, the Mahomes contract became a big talking point for Deshaun Watson. A safety contract, I think, is something that Texan fans need to look at. Not that Justin Reed has the resume that Buda Baker has, but Justin Reed is going to be in a similar situation a year from now that Zach Cunningham is in right now with the Texans, where he's going to have a year left on his rookie deal. And I think undoubtedly Justin Reed is a player that the Texans want to hold on to long term and become one of those foundational players. What's going through Justin Reed's head as he sees the Buda Baker news yesterday?
You think he's even thinking about it at this point? Yeah, I guess he would think about it. I mean, you do. You always try not to think about that stuff. It's exciting. It's a good. It's a good carrot on a stick.
Yeah.
But he's also under relative team control. I keep thinking about potential franchise tags, and I don't think if the Texans get Deshaun Watson his contract, I don't think they're going to be using the franchise tag on anybody.
I guess a better question for you would be, do you think the Texans see Justin Reed the way they do Tunsil and Watson as a guy that would be worth giving a contract that's in that realm of safety to?
Not yet. And that's what I worry about. I feel I like Justin Reed a lot. I like Zach Cunningham a lot. I worry that maybe Texans fans have forgotten what it's like to have an awesome defense with awesome players on it. Because I feel like people talk about these guys like they're perennial all-pros or something. And Buda Baker is not a perennial all-pro. I wouldn't put him up in the top, you know, several safeties in the league. I think that anybody that's approaching free agency is going to get a good payday. That's just how the NFL works.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess maybe some of it has to do with the fact the team gave Nick Martin and Whitney Mercilus near top-of-market contracts for their teams, and neither's made a Pro Bowl.
As you approach free agency, you have a chance to make a whole lot of money.
Yeah.
And I don't know, like, whenever you see anybody get paid, it's an extra carrot on a stick. But I don't know, like, where would the drama be? That is Justin Reed going to hold the Texans to the fire or something for a better contract?
No, I don't know that it's drama. I think it's cap issues. You know what I mean? Like, he's going to be, you know, Justin Reed's another guy that maybe the Texans look at. They want to pay this guy, but they're going to have Watson at his new deal, and the cap's going to go down and all those things. So,
in general, human beings like to have a lot of money. I've noticed that.
That's a fair take. I think it's a fair take, yeah. All right, Seth, we're done. I will see you tomorrow at 6 a.m., my friend. Antibodies to you.
Antibodies, and stay the hell out of the wind.
Yeah, yeah. Be safe, everybody out there. We will be here for you tomorrow at 6 a.m. Stay safe. Stay tuned to Sports Radio 610 all day. We'll keep you tuned on not just sports, but things going on with the hurricane as well. We'll see you tomorrow at 6 a.m. Texans Training Camp Live up next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.